Hey, what's happening? Welcome to the Black Tokyo Podcast. I'm your host, Eric L. Robinson. Today, I'm talking with Timid MC about fake news in U.S. and Japan.
Yeah, I was in Kumamoto. I was in Tokuyama. Now I'm here. Now I'm going to Totori tomorrow.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, I'm on the move.
Okay. Well, we're here in Hiro right now. We were out and about yesterday in Azabu. So tomorrow, yeah, soul food. Shout out to the Soul Food House.
My site, Independent, I like to write articles, comment on some political things, comment on some things that's going on in the news, that type of stuff. And here and there some other things as well, but usually that type of content.
Okay.
And I have... Primarily, it's on the site and it's on Twitter. And we were doing a podcast for a little while, but then we haven't put up an episode in a while. But getting a podcast audience is kind of difficult. Takes time. You got to be consistent.
Oh yeah.
And it takes time. And my partner is just like, oh yeah, it's just, you know, we're not getting enough listeners. It's like, yeah, we gotta stay on it. It takes a long time before that. But yeah. So. Primarily on Twitter right now is where I'm doing most of the action for Independent. And I do about, I got a little over 5,000 followers.
Okay.
I do about, what is it, 100,000 impressions a month.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, just on that site. I haven't written any articles in a while. The last article I wrote was how the media can combat the fake news label.
Nice.
It's, you know... Trump's dominating with this fake news label, right. And media is playing a defensive on it. But one of the reasons why they're playing a defensive, and he's getting so much traction with it, not only because of his platform, because being in his position, he's got a much larger platform, but also because there are a lot of holes in the way media has been covering things lately, and you know, things have moved more towards clickbait type of stuff, sensational type of stuff. You know, it wasn't like that 25 years ago,
right.
You know,
right.
Before the 24-hour news cycles happened.
Right.
So basically I outlined several points like what media can do to try to avoid this fake news label or to navigate in this era of the Trump stuff. You know, like, you know, chill out on the adjectives. Like, you're supposed to report the news. Adjectives show some type of opinion. You know, when you put, oh, it was an amazing night. Okay, well, that's your opinion. You can just say, oh, this is what happened. So that's one way. Also, don't chill with the clickbait, you know, some of the misleading type of articles. And you get it from even some reputable news sources. Mm. You'll see the title, and then you get into the meat of the article, and it's like, eh, that's not really what the title's reflecting.
Right.
But the title's what's drawing people in.
Right.
But yeah, so then people are going to look at that and be like, yeah, well, we don't know if we can really trust what you're saying.
Okay.
So.
So do you think the media is actually afraid to challenge what's out there?
Yeah, I do. I think they're, you know, revenues are down across the board. And they're just kind of hanging on, I guess, to some degree. They're playing it safe. They're not doing as much journalism, as much digging. Like, people are barely challenging... at least media reporters are barely challenging some of the nonsense coming out. I mean, especially this administration. You know, they come out with outrageous stuff that's provable that is false. You can Google 2-3 seconds and you know what they just said is false, but reporters aren't challenging it. Mm. And so when that's put out there and it's set to linger, then it just starts to pick up some legs. You know, reporters need to be there to check that. That's kind of the point of having the media, just to check this nonsense, right? So I think, yeah, they definitely need to get some teeth back. You know, we got independent writers that will call the stuff out.
Right.
But independent writers aren't in that room. They're not necessarily on the TV as much. I mean, you got some. You got like, but Keith Olbermann. You got what's the lady from
Maddow?
Yeah, Kate Maddow. Yeah,
Rachel Maddow. Yeah, yeah.
Right, you got her. The Young Turks have a big platform on the web.
Yep.
You know, but yeah, people have. They should be hitting a wall at every turn. Like, you know, oh yeah, this happened. Like, no, this is not what happened. Everybody should be saying that. You saw a little bit of it recently.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
So do you think that is more on the media, or is it that the general public is just not challenging it? And I say that with a caveat that it seems like the average listener or viewer is just lazy. So they want the information delivered to them versus dissecting and, you know, calling bullshit on what they're hearing.
I think there's a mix. It's definitely a mix of it. Part of it has to do with, I don't want to say social media, but part of it has to do with people being able to exist in bubbles. So when people exist on social media, you follow and you connect with like-minded individuals. And so they're going to continue to post things that you pretty much agree with already. And so you just don't check it because it feeds into your belief already. So you just repost or you just like and you know, reshare it. Instead of taking a look at that and saying, okay, let me go check this with two or three other sources. So what I do on my personal one, like I post a lot of political stuff.
Right.
But when I post it, I always try to check it with other sources first.
Right.
And that just comes from me growing up being a part of the internet and understanding that, you know, not everything on the internet is true.
Right.
So you have to double check and triple check your sources before you post stuff, because anybody can write anything at any time and post it, and you don't know if it's true.
True.
And people will call you out.
Yeah, and I'm constantly calling people out.
Right.
Even, you know, friends, people I'm related to, I'm like, yeah, that's not true. That's not what happened. Or if I see something and it's like, okay, let me look. I'll Google, check a couple of different sources, be like, yeah, no, that's wrong, you know. And I think that hurts people trying to get to the truth. And it is because, you know, one, it's the bubbles. One, people are a little bit lazy.
Right.
Two, you know, even though we are 20-some years into the internet proper, there are still, I would say, most of the people using the internet are still not really acclimated to using the internet. Internet exists as Facebook to them, or, you know, I'm talking, most people would probably still type the URL into the Google search box.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, not, as Spidey's uncle said, with great power comes great responsibility. Like,
right, right.
And not everybody has learned, you know, that use of the internet.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
So I think they, you know, it. We're going to get some of that because people, you know, may not know the differences in certain things. But yeah, we still need to use the same rules that we would have used in traditional media, is checking your sources if you're going to share this or if you're going to believe this, especially in a time right now when the truth is very ambiguous. Facts are being called alternative facts because it's coming from, you know, the administration, and it's not being really challenged. And, like, the truth is no longer really, like, you know, it's bendable by the administration. They don't even care. And so people have to know their facts. They have to get their facts.
Right, so is there an alternative fact or just straight-up lies?
They're just straight-up lies.
Right, okay.
Like, recently, here was the thing. This was in the New York Times. New York Times is not fake news. It's a news organization. It's been around probably 100 years. It's one of the most reputable news organizations in the world.
Okay, yes.
But it's repeatedly being called fake news. And in a couple of days ago, there was an article where I guess it turned out that Trump's son had talked with, I guess it was some Russians or something, and they told the media before that, no, he never did. And then it's come out now that he actually did. Mm. Trump just straight up said, yeah, well, you know, the lie didn't count because I told it to the New York Times, and New York Times is fake news, so it doesn't matter. Like, no, you lied to media. Right. Like, that matters. And the fact that it's not being called out in a way that I feel it should be, mm-hmm. is a real issue right now. You know, the truth is under attack. So people have to take more responsibility to educate themselves if they want to be in the know, if they want to be in the truth. Otherwise, they're just going to, you know, live in their own little bubble.
For those just tuning in, this is the Black Tokyo Podcast, and I'm talking with Tim MC about fake news in the United States and Japan. For those that don't know, Black Tokyo was started back in 1999 by Craig Nine. I took over ownership of the site a few years afterwards, and I believe the first podcast was back in 2003-2004, so it's been quite some time since we've last done a podcast. All right, so dialing back to Japan, what do you think about what's going on here in Japan, and is there any correlation to what you see in the States?
In regards to what?
In regards to, say, fake news or not actually reporting the news.
I really wouldn't know that much about the news or the news bias in Japan. I just get... my Japanese news comes from NHK, and then if it's in Japanese, it comes from NHK Easy News.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So yeah, I wouldn't know about that. This whole fake news idea, I think the concept has kind of touched all countries, because it's so heavily reported on.
What about, say, impacting just your daily life on some of the dealings as far as, you know, you've been in Japan for quite some time right now. Right. And, you know, what you do on a daily basis, do you feel that navigating the playing field here is, you know, sort of a minefield, or, you know, you're getting along with not too many problems?
Yeah, I don't have too many problems here. Yeah, I really haven't had any issues in anywhere around here. Now, there are definitely some differences here than in the States, especially in, you know, working styles and the way things move and change or slowly change, you know. So there are definitely some of those things. But I think if you're going to be in another place, you have to be aware of those things and acclimate yourself to those things.
Okay.
They don't have to change you, but you have to know how to deal with it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, I guess it's like you can be in a place but not of a place. And the thing I can think of off the top of my head as far as like an analogy of it really goes back to I guess some Taoist sayings where they would describe that type of idea as the lotus flower.
Okay.
So the lotus flower is heralded as a beautiful flower.
Right.
But it grows in marshes and some of the dirtiest water. So it's in the place, but it's not of the place.
Okay, I like that.
And so you can be in Japan, you can follow the things that Japan does, but that doesn't mean you have to be, you are becoming Japanese, or you have to become Japanese, because you're not going to be Japanese.
Exactly, right.
And it's not necessary to be.
Right.
You know, we do have some, being foreign here does afford us some kind of leeway in that regard. There are some things we're not expected to know or to follow because we're foreign, which
exactly.
works
yeah.
out.
To our advantage.
It does. At times it does work out to our advantage.
Yeah.
But it can be frustrating when, you know, things aren't working how they could be working, And it's due to, you know, whatever, people not questioning the way things are done or not willing to change the way things are done.
Agreed.
But, you know, you have to navigate that. You have to just be a part of that because, you know, we are in a foreign country. Even if you've been here a long time and it does start to feel like home, there are certain rules and traditions here just like anywhere else. You know, that's how things are done here. So you know, work your way through that.
Yeah, there's an article written by Baya McNeil, and basically he posed the question as far as, are foreigners dangerous? No, I'm sorry, are blacks dangerous in Japan, right? And so when I I saw the tagline, and, you know, I was actually, you know, sort of perturbed because I thought that you shed, like, zero light on the dude that put out the video, you know, because, I mean, just ignorance.
The Japanese dude.
Yeah, just straight ignorance. And, you know, and Baye, you know, called him out, wrote his article, you know, countered it, of course, and posed some very, I think, some good questions. But it makes me go back to when Black Tokyo was started, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, back when JAFA, the Japanese African American Friendship Association, was running. And I remember, you know, a good friend of mine, Harry Stevenson, who died in a scooter accident, actually. Mm. He was the president of the chapter down in Osaka. They had guys up here, you know, in Tokyo doing their thing. But JAFA was challenging a lot of what was coming out as far as, you know, Japanese media, advertisements, yada, yada, yada. So they did a lot of good. But no one or no organization really filled that void that JAFA left, right? So there was a lot more time spent on Black Tokyo, for example, as far as putting out articles, doing things behind the scenes, challenging racist advertisements, whether it was Mondom and their, what's it, skin cleansing paper, where they had Rastafarians and a chimpanzee in the advertisement, and I think the catch copy was strong enough to clean even his skin. They were talking about the chimpanzee, for example, right? And then there's some other ones, E-Mobile, for example, where they had a snow monkey, but it was mimicking the campaign of then Senator Barack Obama, you know, during his quest to become president of the United States. What has been your experience, especially on your blog, in dealing with Japanese and their perceptions of blacks in Japan?
Well, there's a number of questions there. My blog, one of the blogs I run, it's an English blog, and it's aimed at people in English in America. So it's more about American politics and stuff. As far as, I think question of being black in Japan and addressing some of the things, I think there are a couple of things we do need to keep in mind. One, we are in a different country. There are, again, different rules, different ideas. Some things do, you know, rub me the wrong way, might rub me the wrong way. However, I think we need to look at it kind of from a different perspective sometimes. For example, one of the biggest issues in Japan of being black in Japan is you know, seeing the blackface by the comedians,
right,
in Japan. And I think when I see that, I don't look at it exactly the same as if it was a white dude doing it in America.
Okay.
Because the history is not there. The institutional racism's not there. The knowledge of how that affected us is not there. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't question it.
Right.
We shouldn't question it.
Okay.
It just means that I think we could take an educative type of approach instead of you know, a screw this type of approach. Right. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because the person doing it, if they were doing it in the United States and they were white doing it in the United States, when they do it, they know the history. They know what came before. Right. Here, because it's such a homogenous place, and they don't really, you know, people can get along here without knowing anything about outside of the world. Mm-hmm. And so, and you would still, even if someone does it, especially the comedians do it, you know, you would imagine that they know something.
Right.
At least that people are upset. They may not know why, they may not know the depth of it, but they know that this is going to upset some people. But again, you know, they don't necessarily need to care because this is their country and they're, you know, what, 98% homogenous here. Apparently it happens in China too.
Right.
So I take more of an educative approach to it. Because, you know, I know some, you know, a lot of Japanese folks, and they might see something, and, you know, they might just a comedy thing. Because, you know, they would do the same type of thing to their own people just in the name of comedy. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a moment for us to be able, it's a teachable moment for us to be like, yeah, well, you know, for us, that's an issue. It, you know, it doesn't sit well with us.
Right.
Instead of just you know, oh, y'all are crazy.
Right.
You know, like, I had a friend of mine, and, you know, she's into hip-hop. She's all that, she, you know, and all this and that. And, you know, she was like, yeah, what's up, my, you know? And I was like, oh.
Right.
Hold up.
Right.
Hold on.
Can't be dropping the N-bombs here.
Yeah, like, you know, that's not cool.
Right.
And it's like, you know, this is why it's not cool. And, you know, she knows me, she respects me, and so, you know, that was it. She didn't say it again. And so it was cool.
So it was a point of just being educated as far as, or educating her as far as Adis is, you know, sort of coloring outside the lines here.
Right. And I think, like, with, in the States, to try to, you can, we can take that approach.
Right.
But we've taken that approach for 100-something years.
Right.
And they just simply don't care.
Right.
Right.
And that's a big point. Not caring is a great point.
Right. They simply just don't care. Right. Or they might be like, yeah, but, you know, whatever.
Right. You say it.
Or something. Like, here, they might not know.
Right.
Now, if after that they don't care, then it's like, F you.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I try to allow that space. You know, I'm not telling anyone how they need to conduct themselves, but I personally try to allow that space first.
Right.
And then, if, you know, if you're not getting anywhere, then, yeah, well, screw you. You're just, you know, and whatnot.
What do you feel about using platforms as far as making waves?
No, go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, and I say that for, I guess, a myriad of reasons, but one being, if you know you have a social media following with, you know, Americans, Japanese media personalities, what does it take to sort of go outside the norm? So I know various writers here in Japan that will just push the envelope and say, like, you know what, screw you, I'm going to report this. Jake Adelstein is one, for example, right? Mm-hmm. So I read the comments on, like, stuff he posts, and people say, oh, yeah, you know, he's this is fake, and this guy's doing A, B, and C. But as far as investigative reporting, as far as really, you know, not giving a, you know, beep, he goes there. Right. You know, he challenges norms. He talks about things that, you know, Japanese media really wouldn't put out there. Mm. You know, whether it's CNN, Huffington Post, Japan, you know, Mainichi Shimbun, Japan Times, or whatever, they're not really pushing the envelope and calling bullshit on what's going on in Japan.
Right.
So,
yay!
When it comes to us being over here, would you expect more of the media, especially if they had foreign writers, or would you expect just, you know, business as usual?
If they have foreign writers, I would expect at least them trying to get things through. That doesn't mean that anything will get through, because, right. you know, companies, especially companies here, have traditionally, you know, first are slow to change. They have a very do what you're told type of approach to business.
Right.
And so, you know, even if there are foreign writers on the staff, they can be like, you know, we want to try to write this story. And I could very well see a lot of situations where they'd be like, no, you can't write that. And, you know, it just doesn't happen. So I would expect them to try.
Right.
But if it doesn't happen, I mean, you can't really blame them on that. There's another thing I think people need to remember. Japan, like America, has freedom of the press and freedom of expression, and those type of First Amendment that we call First Amendment rights. However, they don't extend to foreigners. So you push too hard, you can end up not being in the country.
Exactly.
And right. they can do that.
Right.
You know, those protections are there for the Japanese, not for, you know, foreigners. So, and you know, it is kind of a new feeling. Like, I haven't done any reporting or anything here, but I did, I do photography as a hobby. And I was in Osaka, and there was a protest going on when they were protesting against the Article 9 change. And they were, Japanese were all out. They had signs, you know, against the prime minister, talking about don't do this and that. And, you know, I took pictures of them. And I had to think about, should I send them to people? Like, not to media. Like, there was the organization that was organizing the protest.
Right.
I met a couple of people, and it's like, oh, yeah, I can send some pictures or whatever. Or I was going to write a blog about it and you know, write about what was going on. But I had to think, like, first, is it my place to get into that? Second, yeah, like, there's no protections for me there.
Right.
You know, who knows when I come up for visa renewal.
Right.
If some people saw this.
Exactly. Right, right.
You know, which is a new feeling for someone coming from the States.
Right.
Where, like, yeah, like, you know, you can't do that to us. We have this protection.
Right.
So I think, you know, foreigners in media in Japan we have to be aware they're also navigating those waters as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with that, as we transition, this is one to give another, I guess, shout out to Baye for what he's doing. I've watched this guy's evolution from when he first started with his blog to what he's doing with Japan Times, and understanding the handcuffs that he also has to wear with writing for the Japan Times, right? So, but it's good that he's putting us out there. It's good that he's posing some questions. I know that there are limitations, but I'm glad to see the evolution. And I say that with this, those of you here in Japan that are on social media writing about us here in Japan, whether that's Black Creatives Japan, Black Women in Japan, and just some of the other you know, groups here in social media, push the boundaries, you know, call others that are trying to get their start here that have a myriad of experiences, so that the rest of us, and not just Blacks in Japan, but other foreigners in Japan, can learn about Japan from an Afro perspective, as I call it here on Black Tokyo. And with that, again, please feel free to call in, leave your commentary, your likes, dislikes, all of that, so that we can, you know, add it in next. And yeah, and lead by example.
Lead by example.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. You know, some of the imagery that we may not like, there are some people who will play that role.
Right.
And, you know, that can help reaffirm some of those issues or stereotypes. I think a lot of times in Japan, any kind of attitudes, negative attitudes against us, they fall into two categories mainly, and one is foreigners,
right,
and others might be black people because they saw something on TV,
right, right,
and they don't have any kind of experience with black people or foreigners,
right,
and so leading by example, not being what, you know, being who we are and not being who they think we are, I think can go a long way.
Agreed. Agreed.
And with that, I'll leave it there. I'd like to thank my guest, Timid MC, for sharing his time and providing insight on what's happening in the United States and Japan. If you would like to leave a comment on this episode, please download the Anchor.fm app and feel free to share your views. Once again, I'm Eric, and thank you for listening to the Black Tokyo Podcast.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.